Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We are back, and we have a little bit of audio I'd like you to listen to before we go back to the phones. My number is 888-914-9149. First thing I'd like you to listen to is, where did it go? It's, where did it go? I had it right here a second ago. There we go. Okay, so this is Matt Walsh of the Daily Wire, and he's being interviewed on the Dr. Phil program. And you really probably should see the video to get the full effect. He's being grilled for his common sense, science-based, forthright position that men are men and women are women.
And who's he getting grilled by?
Well, Dr. Phil's just sort of sitting there, not really saying much. He's just sort of like, I think he's trying to stay out of what he thinks might get him caught in the machinery. But also, there are some people on the stage with him who are, I guess you would say, transgender. So there's a guy, I mean, he seems pretty clearly a man to me. He's got a full beard, but he's also got long hair and long fingernails and a lot of makeup. And there are one or two other people there. And so this particular segment, it's instructive. It's worth listening to because Matt Walsh does such a good job of kind of explaining it clearly. He's being grilled about his view about men and women. And here's what happened.
That's a question I would like to throw out to, you know, other members of the panel, actually, because just like the four-year-old can't answer what is a girl. Well, this is one of the problems with this left-wing gender ideology is that no one who espouses it can even tell you what these words mean. It's like, what is a woman? Well, can you tell me what a woman is?
No, I can't. Because it's not for me to say. Womanhood looks different for everybody.
What do you define a woman as?
An adult human female.
And what does a female mean?
How do you define a female? Someone with female reproductive organs.
Okay.
Someone who's, you know, here's the thing. When you're female, it goes right down to your bones, your DNA. So that's why if someone dies,
okay,
we could dig up their bones 100 years from now. We have no idea what they believed in their head, but we can tell what sex they were because it's ingrained in every fiber of their being.
Interesting. So I'm trying to understand. Your definition is that a woman is someone who is female, you said, right?
Correct. Is okay. A biological female.
So what happens if we have maybe someone who is female, identifies as a woman, right? You know, cisgender woman, right? As you just explained, maybe doesn't have the ability to reproduce. Maybe doesn't have those organs that you're talking about that are reproductive organs.
I have answered the question. You stood up here and said trans women are women.
Yes.
Tell me what you mean. What is a woman?
Womanhood is something that, just as Ethan explained, I cannot define because I am not myself.
But you used the word. So what did you mean when you said trans women are women if you don't know what it means?
Right. So here's the thing. So I do not define what a woman is because I do not identify as a woman. Womanhood is something that is an umbrella term. It includes people
who... That describes what?
People who identify as a woman.
Identify as what?
As a woman.
What is that?
Was to each their own. Okay. Each woman, each man, each person is going to have a different relation with their own gender identity and define it differently. And so
I'm
trans women are women too.
Okay.
And you want to,
you want to reduce women,
you want to reduce men down to maybe just their genetics, our genitals, our chromosomes, right? That's what you're
what
saying.
You want to is do that is that's a, what we're what you want to do is appropriate women. You want to appropriate womanhood and turn it into basically a costume that could be worn.
Actually, I don't think I need the duct tape this time.
That's for me.
Yeah, it's for you. You can use my piece. No, this just, it's good for people to be confronted with reality like that. And you could see the two people, one is a woman who presents herself as a man, the other is a man who presents himself as a woman, and they can't Well, they won't. And maybe it's because they can't define what a woman is. The female of the species. The female of the species who has the capability physiologically to conceive and bear young. I mean, these are some of the basic descriptors of the female of a species. And in the case of human beings, we call the female of the species woman. And Matt Walsh was right, of course, obviously right, self-evidently right, that genetically, chromosomally, even anatomically, and not only when you're alive and you have soft tissue in your body, but this is true for skeletons. A skeleton can be determined to be of a man or a woman. And these basic realities that these people, in their zeal to try to flee, I guess is the best word for it, from reality, they absolutely can't come to grips with it, or they won't come to grips with it. And you remember me talking a little bit earlier about nominalism. This is nominalism run amok, where there really is no, according to the nominalists anyway, there really is no category of men as men or women as women. It's you are whatever you want to be. It's a flight from reality and a denial of reality. That's what this amounts to. Okay, so there's that. Cyrus is going to get that posted. And again, courtesy of the Daily Wire. Cyrus, we have a second little audio clip. We might as well play that now. Why don't you set this one up for us?
All right, so this is Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
And this has to do with, I'm happy to announce, the cessation of a lot of the restrictions that have been in place in England. England is basically opening back up again on the issue of COVID. And you're going to hear Boris Johnson in just a minute talking about this. But let me just kind of give you a brief overview. I'll let him speak first, and then I'll kind of summarize it for you. Let's listen to Boris Johnson.
We can return to Plan A in England and allow Plan B regulations to expire. As a result, from the start of Thursday next week, mandatory certification will end. Organisations can, of course, choose to use the NHS COVID pass voluntarily, but we will end the compulsory use of COVID status certification in England. Yeah. From now on, the government is no longer asking people to work from home. Yeah. And people should now speak to their employers about arrangements for returning to the office. And having looked at the data carefully, the Cabinet concluded that once regulations lapse, the government will no longer mandate the wearing of face masks anywhere. Mr. Speaker, from tomorrow, we will no longer require face masks in classrooms, and the Department for Education will shortly remove national guidance on their use in communal areas. In the country at large, we will continue to suggest the use of face coverings in enclosed or crowded spaces, particularly when you come into contact with people you don't normally meet, but we will trust the judgment of the British people. Criminalize anyone who chooses not to wear one.
What about all those people who have been fined or imprisoned or what have you? I hope they get recompense somehow. Cyrus, did you notice, you know, when you're in Parliament, I don't know if you've ever watched parliamentary procedure there. It's theater. I mean, it's like kabuki theater to see the people standing and sitting. And you notice how each bullet point.
Yelling out constantly.
Well, this is what I loved about
talking
it.
Talking over each other.
Each bullet point, you know, no more vaccine pass. Yeah. Then he gets to the mask and is like, yeah. And everybody in the room is like, yeah. Whoa. We don't do it that way here. But if you want to watch this on TV, it's quite something. Quite entertaining, regardless of what your political position may be. So here's a recap. This from Lily Zhu in the Epic Times. Restrictions, this is for England now, please note. Restrictions including COVID-19 passes, mask mandates, and work from home guidance will be removed, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced. He also suggested that self-isolation rules may be thrown out at the end of March as the pandemic becomes endemic. And I understand those terms to mean that what has been a pandemic is now moving to everybody. Everybody's got it or is soon to have it, apparently. So it becomes endemic like the common cold or the flu. Effective immediately, the UK government is no longer asking people to work from home. COVID pass mandates for large events, nightclubs, etc., that's expiring, won't be renewed. From today on, indoor mask wearing will no longer be required anywhere in England. The requirement for secondary school pupils to wear masks during class in communal areas is also being eliminated. So passes, mask mandates, all these things are now being jettisoned. And you could tell from the reaction of the people that they were pretty happy about that. I think that is appropriate. Now, I want to talk briefly about the transgender thing, because we heard a minute ago from Matt Walsh on that. Okay. Two quick stories. Caitlyn Jenner, and I was, you know, Cyrus, when I was thinking about this story over the last couple of days, and this is from the Daily Caller, I was thinking to myself, what is Caitlyn Jenner famous for? And I stopped and I thought, oh yeah, that's right. As a man, Bruce Jenner won a bunch of gold medals in the Olympics in the 1970s. And not only did I see some of those won, but also I ate Wheaties back in the day. And Bruce Jenner's image was on the cover, or the front of the Wheaties box. And those of you who ate Wheaties back in the day, you probably saw Bruce Jenner with all of his gold medals.
When I think of Wheaties, that's the box that pops up into my head.
The Bruce Jenner box, yep. Yeah. Oh, man, talk about endorsement revenue. He probably, even just from that alone, he probably made his fortune. So that's what he was famous for. I mean, if he weren't an Olympian gold medalist and he just decided that he wanted to present himself as a woman and change his name legally to Caitlyn Jenner, he probably would never have been noticed. So he, in the wake of this ongoing scandal with Leah Thompson, this man who is a quote-unquote trans athlete swimming for the University of Pennsylvania's women's swim team and beating everybody in terms of all the women on the team, just dominating them in terms of time, etc., and none of them are able to win, and this has caused all kinds of furor, and it's unfair. We've discussed it many times. Well, Caitlyn Jenner jumped into the mix and said yesterday, and this is a quote here, that the woke world people are living right now, the woke world that people are living in right now isn't working. And he called upon the NCAA to stop allowing trans athletes to compete in women's sports. You might say, well, that's kind of odd, because isn't Caitlyn Jenner trans? Yeah. And yet you've got this man who is presenting himself as a woman who's saying it's not fair for biological men to compete against women. Now, I agree with Caitlyn Jenner on this issue. It's an interesting turn of events. Quote from an interview that was done. First of all, number one, biological boys, I've said from the beginning, should not be playing in women's sports. Again, Caitlyn Jenner speaking here. We need to protect women's sports. Obviously, this is about Leah Thomas, who has brought a lot of attention to this issue. First of all, I respect her decision to live her life authentically 100%. But it also comes with responsibility and some integrity. I don't know why she's doing this. It's not good for the trans community. I mean, we have a lot of issues in the trans community that are very difficult and very challenging. We have a suicide rate that's 9 times higher than the general public, but it's also not good for women's sports. He says she, referring to Leah Thomas or Thompson, she's beating the competition by 2 laps. Pointing out that the University of Pennsylvania swimmer was born a biological boy and raised as a biological boy, and that his cardiovascular and respiratory systems, his hands, etc., are bigger, and therefore he can swim faster.
Wait, are you saying there's a difference between men and women?
It almost sounds like wow. It, doesn't there? Bigger cardiovascular system, bigger respiratory system, bigger hands, and your hands play a very big part in how fast you can swim. Caitlyn Jenner says, all of this woke world that we're living in right now is not working. I feel sorry for the other athletes that are out there, especially at Penn or anybody she's competing against, because in the woke world, you got to say, oh my gosh, this is great. And on and on and on. No, it's not. We need to protect women's sports, and the NCAA needs to make the right decision tomorrow. And I think that's probably to stop this right now and rethink it. This is surreal to me. That Caitlyn Jenner, who is probably the most well-known trans person in the United States anyway, maybe kind of a figurehead, that he, Caitlyn Jenner, would say this. I agree. I think that he's right in saying this. Now, there's a twist to this story. The twist is, and this, again, this is an article from the Daily Wire. On January 8th, University of Pennsylvania women's swim team member Leah Thomas, I said Thompson earlier, that was a misspeak, sorry about that. Leah Thomas, a biological male who is engendered outrage. You get the joke there, Cyrus? Engendered outrage by competing against and crushing women swimmers in competition, swam a race in which Thomas's time was suspiciously slower than previous times, permitting Isaac Hennig, a Yale swimmer who is biologically female but identifies as male, to win. And this, the syntax there was not quite graceful. The point is, they're now looking into whether or not Leah Thomas, the man who's competing as a woman, might have thrown the race to Isaac Hennig from Yale, who is a woman who presents as a male. Are you following me so far, Cyrus? I know this is complicated.
So to make a point, he threw the race.
Well, that's what some people are accusing. I mean, far be it from me to make an accusation. I don't know. But people are wondering. Here's what the article says. That prompted, that being the fact that Leah Thomas, who's been consistently dominating all the women in this sport, suddenly now, at a time much slower than his previous times, suddenly now a woman who presents as a biological male now wins that race against him. That prompted a young woman who's on Penn swim team with Thomas to surmise in an interview that Thomas and Hennig colluded before the race in order for Hennig to win and thus disprove the assumption that Thomas, as a biological male, could not be beaten by a biological female competitor.
This is someone on his own swim team saying that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and here's a quote from the interview. The swimmer who preferred to remain anonymous out of fear from activists, I could totally understand why, told the interviewer, looking at Leah's time, I don't think she was trying. I know they're friends, and I know they were talking before the meet. I think she let her win to prove the point that, oh, see, a female to male beat me. When asked if she thought that Thomas and Hennig had colluded, she replied, I do. I can't say for sure, but I wouldn't be shocked if I found out that it was 100% true. The article, this is from OutKick, I guess that's a sports-related outlet, noted that in the 100 freestyle race, Hennig finished with a time of 49.57. Thomas touched the wall in 52.84. During a November tri-meet with Princeton and Cornell, Thomas swam the 100 freestyle in 49.42. So that is roughly three seconds slower. And in this kind of competitive sports, you know, a percentage of 1 second can be a huge deal. So this is 3 full seconds, or close to 3 full seconds slower. Thomas's teammate also noted that in the January 8th 200 freestyle, Thomas only won by 2 seconds. She said, I was on deck and said to a friend, she's literally not trying. You could just tell. It was blatantly obvious. I was watching the 200 free, and she was literally keeping pace with the other girls. She was number one in the country at that point. These are definitely talented swimmers, but they're not the caliber of being at the top of the country, in the country, or anything like that. You can tell when someone is dying and they're swimming slow. You can also tell when someone is not trying. And I could see in the 200 freestyle that Leah was not trying. So there's the wrinkle. Is it possible that maybe there is some collusion to try to throw off the chorus of people who are saying that this is unfair? Now, we have to take a break, so I'm just going to toss one other little thing into the mix, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. And that is, and I guess I'm not surprised, the new governor of New York, Governor Kathy Hochul, she wants transgender inmates in prisons to choose which prisons they'll go to. They'll get to choose where they're housed based on their gender identity. And this will be a policy directive that she is promoting in the new $216 billion budget plan for the state of New York. The sweeping new policy says inmates who have a gender identity that differs from their assigned sex at birth will have the right to request placement in prison housing with persons of the gender that is consistent with such person's gender identity.
Oh, criminals won't abuse that.
Huh. So let me think this through. So a man, trying to follow this popcorn trail here, a man who's a criminal and he's convicted and he's sentenced to prison, if he says, I identify as a woman, he won't go to the all-male prison. He'll go to the prison that all the other inmates are women. That's what I'm reading from this. Why would any man want to do that? It just doesn't make sense, does it? Why would a man want to do that? I'm going to have to think on that for a while. But FYI, denizens of the great state of New York, your new governor is proposing that that happen. What could possibly go wrong? I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Compelling insights.
Yes, we've been waiting for a long, long time.
Unpredictable conversations.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Encouragement for your day.
We ain't gonna wait no more. We're getting ready to rock and roll.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Great song. FYI, this is for your good to know file. Idaho state lawmakers are calling for flags at half mast in recognition of Anti-Abortion Day of Tears. A committee of Idaho state lawmakers introduced a resolution earlier this week that would recognize January 22nd as a day of tears, lowering flags to half staff to draw attention to the practice of abortion. If you're interested in reading the article with all the specifics, we'll have it posted for you on the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. Also, you probably have heard of Jordan Peterson. He's extremely well known lately. He was a tenured professor at the University of Toronto, and he quit. He's a psychologist by trade, best-selling author, and in an article for the National Post, Dr. Peterson, who recently sat down for an interview, he says the search pointed to the school's obsession with diversity, inclusivity, and equity, which he abbreviated simply as DIE, D-I-E. He said, I had envisioned teaching and researching at the U of T full-time until they had to haul my skeleton out of my office. I loved my job, and my students, undergraduates and graduates alike, were positively predisposed toward me, but that career path was not meant to be. Peterson voiced frustration that his qualified and supremely trained heterosexual white male graduate students face a negligible chance of being offered university research positions despite their stellar scientific dossiers. And that, of course, thanks to diversity mandates. He says these have been imposed universally in academia despite the fact that the university hiring committees had already done everything reasonable for all the years of my career and then some to ensure that no qualified minority candidates were ever overlooked. My students are also partly unacceptable precisely because they are my students. I am an academic persona non grata because of my unacceptable philosophical positions, and this isn't just some inconvenience. These facts rendered my job morally untenable. How can I accept prospective researchers and train them in good conscience, knowing their employment prospects to be minimal? So this is really indicative of how far academia has fallen, because you have somebody as brilliant and as effective as Jordan Peterson now, by his own volition, he's stepping out of it just because it's so rigged against people who are otherwise qualified. Let's go to Stella now in Los Angeles. Good morning, Stella.
Hey, good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
My main question is about Bible definitions, but I just wanted to make a comment about the transgender athletes. Okay. I have a lesbian coworker, and she asked me, "Hey, what did you think about the Pope talking about people choosing pets over kids being selfish?" And then that got into like a whole civil, you know, Catholic versus LGBTQ community conversations. And we said, I asked her about transgender athletes, and she said, well, I think it's fair because hormonally they are who they transition to. And she said, we have to look at the science of it. I said, okay, well, if you want to look at the science of it, then why don't we look at the XX and the XY? And she said, well, no, that's just too binary. So I don't know. I feel like she just contradicted herself. And I agree with you that maybe they can't define themselves because they don't know how to.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
here's a question you could ask her. Can I give you a thought experiment you could ask her?
Okay.
So we were talking earlier about Caitlyn Jenner, originally known as Bruce Jenner. Okay. Caitlyn Jenner, bring this up to your friend. Caitlyn Jenner has children. Okay. Mm-hmm. Caitlyn Jenner claims now to be a woman. What is mm-hmm. Caitlyn Jenner's relationship to Caitlyn Jenner's children? Ask that question. What do you think her answer is going to be?
Whatever Caitlyn Jenner identifies as would be, I don't know. I guess well, that would be her answer.
It could be her answer. It might be. But you and I both know that the answer is father.
So dad. Yeah.
Right. So Caitlyn Jenner is the father of those children. In fact, Caitlyn Jenner is not just by relationship the father. Caitlyn Jenner, as Bruce Jenner, fathered those children in the manner that men father children. You follow my meaning. So the unbreakable, irreversible relationship is father to those children. So then the next question I would ask is, can a woman be a father? And she's probably going to say, well, yeah. Okay, so can a man be a mother? And if you know, the mother of Caitlyn Jenner's children is a woman, and she is, she doesn't try to, you know, she hasn't gone down the trans road. So do those children have two mothers? Or do they have a mother and a father? And if they have a mother and a father in terms of things like, you know, sperm and ovum, conception, you know, all of the scientific things that go into conception. Right. If those children have a mother and a father, mm-hmm. then what does that mean? Does that mean that, do you see what I'm saying? You just start asking questions like that, mm-hmm. and you'll see very quickly that her ability to argue is going to fall apart. Not because you're being mean, but you're trying to help her see.
Right. But the hard thing is, I get the whole thought experiment thing, but I think it'll be difficult even getting that far, because she's just going to, you know, shut down the conversation.
That's okay, but you could point that out to her. You could say, hey, listen, I'm all about the science. I'm happy to discuss it. What does this say about you? I mean, does that mean you're intolerant? Does that mean you're anti-diversity? I'm all about tolerance and diversity. I'm more than happy to consider your point of view. Why aren't you willing to consider my point of view?
Mm-hmm.
And raise the tolerance question. Anyway, you had some questions about Bibles, Stella. What was the question about that?
Punchline is, I am looking for ways to look up Greek and Hebrew definitions of, and the background is, I go to a Christian school, non-Catholic Christian school, and one of my courses this semester, we have a semester-long project where we pick one word from the Bible. I chose friend/friendship.
Okay.
And I have to look up three Hebrew definitions, three Greek definitions, and three verses with those definitions, and write a whole paper on, like, analyzing what friendship means in those different terms.
Right.
But the three different references that our professor gave us, they're online resources. And I already emailed him, and I said, I know that your syllabus is asking for, I think it was, like, NSV. And I said, I'm a practicing Catholic, and USCCB approves of these different versions. Are you okay with me using these versions? He said, yes, go ahead.
Okay.
But the the three online references he gives us, they, I feel like they focus on King James Version.
I can help you.
And even though they have, okay.
Yeah. In other words, you don't need to explain it anymore. What I would do is go to a website called blueletterbible.org. Do you have a pen handy?
That's one of the references he gave us. And I don't, and I think they only had like GN, Good News Translation.
Well,
and,
but hear
even
me out.
When I click on it, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay, because I think I understand what the problem is. The thing is, you want the Greek and or Hebrew words for friend, and there are different kinds of words for in Greek for friendship. And this would be another thing I'd recommend. Get C.S. Lewis's book called The Four Loves, because he discusses. So storge is the word that's used for empathy. Philia is the word that's used for a bond that you would have with a friend. Eros is romantic love, and agape is unconditional love, the kind that God gives us. So C.S. Lewis explains chapter by chapter the meaning of each of these four Greek words for friendship, and it's quite good. But on the blueletterbible.org website, what you're really interested in is not whether it's King James Version, and you can change it. You can go to Revised Standard Version. You can go to the Latin Vulgate. You can. There are plenty of other Protestant versions. The Revised Standard Version is accepted by the Catholic Church, so you don't have to worry about that. But the key is you want to click on the verse itself that will bring up the language tools. And so there in the language tools, you will find each word of that given verse spelled out, both in the Greek and also transliterated into the English way that you would write out the Greek. And there's a link to the Strong's Concordance. So the Strong's Concordance will give you the etymology of the word. It'll tell you what part of speech it is. It'll give you examples of where this word appears in Scripture elsewhere. It will give you some examples from maybe some ancient Greek that would not be scriptural, but it would be Greek as it was used in literature. And it will also give you a definition of the term in descending order of how common that definition is. And it sounds like that's what you really want. You want those Greek tools or the Hebrew tools, and all of that's available at that website.
Okay. Yeah, that was the main website that he recommended that we use. And I was frustrated because I would change the version and then it would load with the word that I have and then it would just revert back to King James Version. And then when I looked up Strong's definition, when I Googled, I was like, who is Strong? What is Strong? And then I saw that it was like
the editor of
related to the King James Version.
Yeah, no, see, here's the thing to understand. Here's the thing to understand is that what you're looking for is the Greek. I mean, let's just assume it's the Greek that you're looking for. That's the underlying language that would be the language that these other versions were translated from. So that is not going to change. Now, there are different recensions or different manuscript bodies that some of these different versions are translated from. But most of all the modern ones are going to be translated from, and I think it's Codex Vaticanus. I'd have to double check it. I think most of them are translated from that recension of manuscripts. So you're not going to see a variation between the Greek words for one English translation versus another. You might find it, but for the most part, it's going to be uniform. So anyway, that would be my advice. And do, by all means, read The Four Loves by C.S. Lewis. I think you'll find it very helpful. Thanks. Let's go now to, let's go to Rocio in Chicago. Hi, Rocio.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to switch gears back to your last hour when I listened to the last two ladies in tears. I could relate, and I wanted to pass on a tidbit what helped me when I was at that point in my married years. So my fear, I was terrified to think that I had to say no to who was my spouse at that time. At that time in my life, we were married about 25 years. The emotional and verbal abuse and sexual abuse was getting uglier. And through a lot of prayer, I received what I felt like a serene answer. My two biggest fears were, one, I was afraid of the monster that I would awaken him if I said no. And two, I took on guilt. I kept saying, if I don't, then I will cause him to sin, seeking it elsewhere. And through prayers, I felt in my heart, number one, saying to me, you cannot be responsible for his sin. Stop. And two, only you can defend your dignity and nobody can do this for you. And I will be with you. And only you can give yourself that respect. So with the grace of God, I went through all of that. And yes, he blew up into a monster. I stayed married 30 years, but through a lot of prayer, I knew my discernment, what I had to do. And now the divorce is going to be about 4 years. Now, I still pray for my turn over to the Sacred Heart of Mary.
Rocio, my heart goes out to you. I'm so sorry that you went through all that difficulty. I'm out of time, though. I've got to take a break. I wish you well. God bless you. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Man, the time goes by so fast. I just want to remind you about our hashtag Fast for Life movement that we are just building ahead of steam with. And that's people all around the world who are joining in solidarity for unborn children as we approach the time of the anniversary of the dreadful Supreme Court decision Roe versus Wade. And people are participating by going to relevantradio.com/fast and letting us know how they're going to participate by way of fasting in some way from food or what have you. And it's something that's open to you. You can do it right now. We'll be happy to send you a free bonus ebook. It's a digital download called The Choice is Love. And what's neat about this book is that it gives you very good, convincing answers to the kinds of questions that people might ask you, like if the fetus is so small that it can't survive apart from the mother, is it really a human being at that point? And other questions like that. So if you'd like some good, compelling answers to questions like that, this ebook is for you. It's free. And all you have to do to get it is go to relevantradio.com/fast and tell us how you're going to do it. Lisa from Hobbs, New Mexico says, I will be fasting from online shopping and I will fast from speaking negatively. Joe from Havertown, Pennsylvania says, traditional fast as well as incorporating some of the suggested ideas into my fast on Friday. And you can let us know what you'd like to do. Again, just simply go to relevantradio.com/fast. Let's go now to Mary in California. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I just have kind of a weird question. I was wondering if it's okay to use or to wear checkerboard print, like shoes or clothes. Actually, just got, I'm not really into that print. Mm-hmm. I just got some shoes that I really like. Uh-huh. But then I also saw on social media that it could be some kind of Masonic symbol where they use to control the mind. So I'm guessing the people.
Do you mean like black and white? Do you mean like the black tile is black, one is white?
Yes, exactly. Okay. The whole print, black, white checkerboard.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. That is that has a symbolic connotation in the world of Freemasonry, but they don't mm-hmm. own that. There have been black and white, you know, side by side for who knows how long, long before, you know, Freemasonry was even a blip on the screen. So it, in a way, you know, it's kind of like how the LGBTQ people have expropriated the rainbow as if it belonged to them.
The rainbow.
Yeah, it doesn't belong to them, but they use it and they've invested.
You think of them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's not, I mean, obviously if you use a rainbow, you have to be aware that some people might think, oh, you're making a point about LGBTQ or something like that, even when you're not. I find it very interesting that they seized upon the very symbol as a reminder of God punishing the world through the flood for gross immorality. How ironic it is that they glory in this symbol of the rainbow, which is God's reminder to his people that I'm not going to punish you through floodwaters again. There may be other punishments that God might mete out to us, but that punishment was a result of gross immorality. And how strange it is that that's the symbol that they've chosen. But anyway, no, black and white, in the world of Freemasonry, it can have a number of different meanings, one of which would be the duality that they believe exists in the universe. But for you to have black and white checkerboard tile in your home or elsewhere, it doesn't contain in itself any special meaning. It's only a meaning if you're, you know, Freemasonic. So,
okay. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Great to talk to you. Let's go now to, let's go to Rich, who's been waiting heroically patiently in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Is this Patrick Madrid? Or?
The one and only.
Okay, I thought you had a stand-in today. But anyway.
I'm standing in for today.
I hear you, boss. I've been watching these TV evangelists for a long time. Like I saw an interview with Osteen and Rick Warren and Duplantis and Copeland. What's his name? The guy in Dallas, James Robinson.
Okay.
And they were all. First of all, these guys don't preach the gospel. It's a perverted gospel, and they're according to Galatians 1, they're accursed. I didn't say it; the book said it. And the people that I talked to, I went visited Osteen's church. They're almost all former Catholics who got bored with the Catholic Church because, you know, if you've ever talked to them, they just say there's nothing happening, and then they go from bad to worse. I hate to say that, but I grew up Catholic in Milwaukee, and I could tell you some stories, you know, and I'm not a prophet.
But in the interest of time, because it's short, did you have a question you wanted to ask about them?
Yeah, do you think there's any... Well, but by the way, I want to tell you that Osteen and Warren and all these guys were just lavishing praise on Francis, the Pope. They couldn't say enough good things about him. So what does that tell you about the Catholic Church, too?
Not- hey, Rich, do you have a question about those televangelists that I could try to answer?
Yeah. Go look at Acts 20. Paul was crying the blues.
I don't have time to do a Bible study. Did you have a question that you wanted me to discuss?
Yeah. Why don't you look at Acts 20 and talk about it, about where Paul was begging us to watch out for wolves in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, okay. Well, there St. Paul is warning us that some people can appear to be godly on the outside, and they may say a few good things, but in reality, as he says, they are ravenous wolves. So we are to be on the lookout for them and avoid them. So as far as the health and wealth preachers are concerned, one thing that they seem to have in common is that they want you to demonstrate your faith in God by giving them money. And their shtick is that if you give them money to fund their private jets and their luxury lifestyles, that God will bless you because you have demonstrated your faith by giving money to these televangelists. There's a lot that's wrong with their theology, and I'm sure you've already picked up on that, Rich. But if you're asking me what is my opinion of them, I would say that I believe that they tend to be false teachers, and the gospel that they're presenting is not the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's a gospel of how do I get wealthy?
Get that in your spirit.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Rich. I do appreciate it. Let's go to Bob now in Youngstown. Good morning, Bob.
Patrick, I got a question for you as to why. I mean, I was an altar server. I went to Catholic school in the 60s. Okay. And every class I went through, the nuns would tell us about Danny Thomas, how he went into church, lit a candle in front of the statue of St. Jude, prayed that if he becomes successful here, that he would build a hospital in his honor, which he kept his promise. Every day, and I mean, if you had a child, you brought them to St. Jude, it's a miracle when they come out. If they have cancer, they come out well. The people don't have to pay a dime to for care. They don't have to pay for food, lodging. That's all taken care of. And I wrote to the Pope. I wrote to the Bishop of Memphis. And I asked them, why don't they make Danny Thomas a candidate for sainthood? I never heard nothing back, but why would you say, don't you think he'd be a good candidate?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, he was an entertainer. That's what he was known for. So his career as an entertainer, I think, would, if there were a cause for his canonization, they would have to take into account, you know, what was his life like. He did this very good thing, no doubt about it, by starting the St. Jude Hospital and by honoring that prayer that he, or in the promise that he made to the Lord. So, I mean, good for him. I mean, I can't say enough good about that. But in order for somebody to be ultimately canonized a saint, their life is going to be closely scrutinized. So there are people whose lives maybe might not pass that test. Now, I don't know one way or the other about Danny Thomas. He might have been as pure as the wind-driven snow, for all I know. But I think that that would be the question. So if there had been an effort to start the cause for his canonization, maybe, you know, there were some things in there that might have been embarrassing or problematic, and that could be, if it got dropped, that might be why. Maybe nobody's ever started a cause for his canonization, and that could be done. These are matters beyond your control and mine. I have no way to, you know, jumpstart something like that. But, you know, it's certainly possible that if he has, you know, some standing that would be considered for a cause for canonization, that there would be a cause undertaken. But then again, maybe his life was not, you know, something that would be, that would pass muster, I guess the way I could put it. Does
but
that make sense?
You hear saints who, yeah, but you hear saints who wouldn't have cut the mustard that became saints. I mean, you know, look at, what is it, St. Paul was Saul, mm-hmm. killed people. And,
yeah.
But I think that, you know, when I hear, and nothing against the boy in Italy who died, and he had a social media following, and he would talk about Jesus, and they're looking for, he's a candidate for sainthood. And then I think of that, and like I said, nothing against him. But you see Danny Thomas, the St. Jude Hospital, none of those kids would be surviving if it wasn't for him starting that hospital. So
that's true. I don't dispute your point. But take a look at Oscar Schindler, who was a Catholic, and he said, you know, they made the movie Schindler's List about him, and he saved hundreds, if not thousands, of Jewish lives during World War II. And I seriously doubt he'll ever be raised to the altars of canonization, because his life, morally speaking, was a mess. And even though he did some really very stellarly important things, like saving all those Jewish lives, there was a lot about his life that was not consistent with sainthood. So I think, just practically speaking, Bob, that may be the reason why. I don't know, and I don't know enough about Danny Thomas. I only remember him as a kid when he was on TV. But I guess it just remains to be seen. And who knows, maybe when you're in heaven someday, you can bump into him and ask him. So in the meantime, we'll just have to wait and see. I do appreciate the call, though. Thank you. Let's go to Thomas now in Minnesota. Hello, Thomas. It's your turn. Yay.
Hi, Patrick. Does God answer the prayers of Muslims?
Does God answer the prayers of the Muslims? Well, it's a difficult question to answer, because on the one hand, we know that God is drawing everybody to himself, and he wants people to know him, and Muslims, it seems they're seeking that, but they also reject him. So, I mean, they reject what he's revealed in Jesus, you know, that he is God and the Blessed Trinity is the fullness of understanding God. So I guess the best way I could answer that would be to say that, as St. Peter himself learned in his revelation from God, he says this. Do you have a pen or pencil you can write down, or can your mom write down this verse for you? So here's what St. Peter said in Acts chapter 10, verse 34 and 35. He said, and Peter opened his mouth and said, truly, I see that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable to him. So in that sense, we can say certainly if a Muslim is repenting and he's seeking God and he's trying to know God more, you know, God is going to help him. There's no question about that. Now, Jesus also said, and here's another verse your mom can write down. It's John 3:16, where Jesus said, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish but have eternal life." So that means that God loves all human beings, and he desires all human beings, including Muslims and everybody else. He wants them to be happy. And so he sent Jesus, his son, to show them the path to heaven. So I think those two verses tell us that if you're sincerely seeking the Lord, you really want to know him, and you're seeking to be good, that God is going to hear your prayers, and he's going to draw you closer to him. And we're out of time. So I have to leave that at that, Thomas. That's a very good question that you're asking, and do keep thinking these deep thoughts. And hopefully over time you'll have a chance to read those passages with your mom. Well, until tomorrow, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.
Excellent.